We're about to get into Midday Jazz and Justice. Coming up, Obi Igbuna, U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwe Herald, joins us this afternoon for a discussion of Zimbabwe and all things related there too. Your phone calls at 1:30. And just after the Laugh to Keep from Crying segment at 2:30 this afternoon, we're going to have a special original press conference from a prior black president. So don't go anywhere. A lot coming up. Midday Jazz and Justice.
And now for our feature presentation.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience.
It's my pleasure to bring to you somebody that's for the real people.
Wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake. This is
Midday Jazz and Justice on the Liberated Masses medium of WPFW 89.3 FM from Washington, D.C. to the world.
Hey, hey, old bean. And you too, baby. This is Uncle Tom, Commander-in-Chief of your Black Freedom Fighters in North America, bringing you the latest news from your fighting black underground. Hang on, brothers and sisters. Liberation is near. It's almost time. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off.
Madness. The white man at best is corny. But who is to say it? How is the black man to say what when he sits biting his ass in the sun or laid across a puddle for snails to cross over? How and with what logic and moral? Who is fed by the meanest of streams? Will we move or will we be merely proud as the best, yet with will to be ego, a self-same main bastards corrupting our inch of despair to try what for what? Who will appreciate? Who will benefit? To desert is no different or better. They all have deserted and sit in the sun under a sign. Spirits waving through summer and fall. Spirits in the cold place of our crucifixion. Break the man head off the sign. It is a cross, a double dirty cross. To hang your civilization.
WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice. Welcome everybody to the program this afternoon. That, of course, the track is called Madness from the album Black and Beautiful Soul and Madness, featuring Amiri Baraka, recently re-released on Sunboy Records. We understand Baraka was in town to some packed house events this past weekend. Hope those who were in attendance enjoyed themselves. At the top of the hour, we played part of our regular intro, Hugh Masekela's Is Anybody Out There, from the 1973 album Stimela. And this afternoon, as I said, Obi Igbuna, U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald, joins us this afternoon for an update and a discussion on what's happening with Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, the CBC, and all types of other related events. Obi, welcome back to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Always a pleasure to be here.
So I just got caught up on a lot of things. I was watching President Mugabe with Christiane Amanpour on CNN. Mm-hmm. We know that he was here, had some dealings with the CBC, or there was some discussion around the CBC.
Yes.
So what is going on with Zimbabwe? Just very quickly, if we could get us caught up on what Amanpour calls the dysfunctional state of Zimbabwe. What is really going on with the disease and the leadership structure, poverty rates, et cetera? What's happening in Zimbabwe right now?
Well, as always, like I said, it's always a pleasure to be here. And I thank you so much for always providing this platform. Very necessary. I wanted to start by just saying that in August of this year, just a couple of months ago, Zimbabwe lost a giant in the liberation struggle, the Vice President Joseph Masika. And for those who know Joseph Masika's background, Joseph Masika's relevance to the struggle of Zimbabwe, you know that he comes out of the trade union movement, the Rhodesian Textile Union, going back to the 50s now. And it's interesting, as we have seen, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union spokesperson Wellington Chibibe, whose main labor really is getting U.S. dollars and British pounds from the U.S. and British government to create an atmosphere for regime change in Zimbabwe. And we've heard different people like the Congress of Black Trade Unionists, the representative from the AFL-CIO Solidarity Center, talk about the trade union perspective in Zimbabwe. And I know for sure at no point did they ever try to reach out to Vice President Masika to get his perspective on trade union activism in Zimbabwe and the role it played in liberating the country. So, and he was the most incarcerated freedom fighter during the Second Chimurenga. And when I had the opportunity to have dinner with him last summer, because of that relationship to prison in Zimbabwe, and people should know that the prisons in Zimbabwe during the colonial Rhodesian era were just as bad or worse than Robben Island. In Maurice Yagumbo's book, For the People, he talked about at one point they were feeding the prisoners rotten squirrel meat. And so Masika went through that. So as soon as I talked to him, before he even got into Zimbabwe, he wanted updates on Mumia Abu-Jamal's case. He wanted updates on Leonard Peltier's case. He wanted updates on the Cuban Five activity that we were engaging in this country, because he felt that because of his experience being imprisoned by the Rhodesians for around 20 years, 20 and a half years, he could identify firsthand with all of our comrades behind bars. So I wanted to start by giving a tribute to Masika. He should be remembered, and his work will continue in Zimbabwe.
I guess we should just say quickly that it was good he got to experience some degree of freedom afterwards,
yes,
unlike what it looks like is to be the fate of Mumia and Peltier.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, so.
And that was the thing he said to me. He said, comrade, one thing about prison, it can have a positive or negative impact on your character, on the makeup of your individual resistance to the people's collective resistance. He said it can either intensify your fighting spirit or it can crush your fighting spirit. And luckily, in his case, and also the other late vice president, Simon Muzenda, it intensified their fighting spirit. And Simon Muzenda, who passed around 2005, he also was a trade unionist. And I know that these people who claim to be in alliance with the trade union, they got the money from the U.S. and British government to start the opposition party in the first place. I know that these trade union experts never seeked any genuine and objective dialogue with those two brothers. In terms of my trip to the UN, I wanted to start by saying that what had happened was my colleagues on the Herald, the country's national newspaper, they were denied visas to come to the UN, even though it geographically happens to be in New York, which raises the question, with all of the changes taking place on the international scene, should the United Nations pack up and leave New York so that the United States does not use its geographical location as a political leverage point? Because there was no, what sense did it make? First of all, President Mugabe and his delegation that come to New York every September, they can't go 25 miles out of Manhattan anyway. So it made no sense. And all they were going to do was be around him and cover the trip. And under normal circumstances, my job is to just correspond with press outlets in our community when I go up there to New York to be with them in my capacity as being the U.S. correspondent to the national newspaper. But this time I had to cover the trip.
So why were the visas denied?
They gave no explanation at all, but I could tell you what I think. It goes back to what happened in June of this year. The Herald was the only newspaper in the world to expose the Obama administration. In June, Jared, when the inclusive delegation led by Prime Minister Shangri came to the White House to see Obama, right before they were leaving the Willard Hotel, which, as you know, is 3 minutes from the White House by car, maybe 45 seconds, depending on the flow of traffic, the Secret Service pulled Minister Walter M. Zimbi out of the delegation, pulled him out of the line, asked him who he was. Under normal function, he's the Minister of Tourism and Hospitality, but he was President Mugabe's representative on that delegation, and he was told that he could not come to the White House for a photo op with Obama and Shangri and a brief meeting. And all he would have done, based on the makeup of the delegation, is just observe and take notes of the dialogue between President Obama and Prime Minister Shangri. And he was told at the last second that he couldn't even come to the White House.
Was Mugabe invited to that meeting?
No, because one of the things about Zedera, the sanctions, he was he's still banned from coming to Washington. But one of the concessions was that since the delegation went to Brussels, then they came to Washington, then they went to Germany, then they ended up at the UK, because this is an inclusive government and Shangri, the prime minister, obviously led the delegation, they had to have a ZANU-PF representative on that delegation. And the Obama administration made that overture because they thought that the rest of the countries would follow their lead. No one else did it. Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, is the one who was behind this, we have reason to believe, because she usually does her United Nations briefings from New York. That particular Friday, she came to Washington under the pretext of talking about the emergency of North Korea. This is right around the time that the U.S. journalists were incarcerated in North Korea. But because of her relationship to Zimbabwe, the fact that she has her doctorate on Zimbabwe, because she was President Obama's foreign policy advisor during his historic campaign, because she was the architect of the attempted invasion of the DRC in 1999, working in conjunction with the Rwandan government, working in conjunction with the Ugandan government to invade the Congo to consolidate control of the coltan mines. And we know that move was countered by President Mugabe, who at the time was the head of the Southern African Development Community's defense organ, in conjunction with previous president of Namibia, Sam Nujoma, and Jose Eduardo dos Santos, president of the Democratic Republic of Angola. Their militaries merged, went in and fought off the Ugandans, fought off the Rwandans, and prevented neocolonialism from resurfacing in the Congo. So it goes back to that. And ever since then, she has been initiating hostile policies towards Zimbabwe. And President Obama denied the press the opportunity to ask him and Prime Minister Shangri questions in relationship to this matter, because he thought that the news might have already been broken.
Now, and Brother Obi, just 1 second, so people know that you're listening to Obi Igbuna here on Midday Jazz and Justice, more importantly on WPFW 89.3 FM. One thing I just want to back up for a quick second, because mm-hmm. you said a lot of powerful things there, particularly about our current UN ambassador Susan Rice. Mm-hmm. There is documentation to support what you just said, right? Because I know a lot of people are going to be upset at hearing that she was involved in these attempted invasions and that she's had this long-standing antagonistic relationship to Zimbabwe.
It can be documented, and if arrangements can be made, she can come on this show. If her schedule permits, and we can raise this.
Right,
and
well,
she's the expert on Zimbabwe, because she got her PhD on the liberation struggle in Zimbabwe. So she would be the expert, not me.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to give our listeners a chance to clarify that.
Okay.
And so that they also know it, in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone line so they can join this discussion at 202-588-0893.
Mm-hmm.
But just very quickly, I mean, because before we do, we step aside, I just want to back up for a quick second and get you to, because, there's so many things that you've already said.
We got a lot to cover.
But I wanted to Well, let me, I guess, go ahead and continue, because I wanted to ask you more about what Amanpour was saying on CNN about the dysfunctional, as she said.
Let's deal with Amanpour first, because too often when we see these journalists interview people of President Mugabe's stature, or any head of state for that matter, we pay very little attention to their relationship to international developments. She shares a bed every night because of marriage. She wakes up every morning too and goes to bed looking at the face of Mr. James Rubin. For those of you who don't know who James Rubin is, he was the Assistant Secretary of State under Clinton, Bill Clinton. And right now, at this moment, as we have this conversation, he is one of the top foreign policy advisors to President Obama. And Christine Amanpour herself, she, I guess she feels qualified to talk about dictators in the world because she's the beneficiary of the Iranian dictatorship. Her family was part of the Iranian elite under the Shah of Iran. Avid, passionate supporters of the Shah of Iran, one of the worst leaders of the 21st century. So for her to sit there on a high horse and attempt to disrespect President Mugabe, it's very important that those who observe that interview know her relationship to this issue, number one. Number two, understanding the strategic and opportunist measure of injecting a statement from Desmond Tutu into that particular discussion.
Well, she said that Desmond Tutu said I had written it down here, I can't find it, but something to the effect that Mugabe's rule was unjust, that he should be removed, that he was a problem facing the world, and so on. And this comes from, of course, Desmond Tutu.
And she didn't do Desmond Tutu, and she didn't do Desmond Tutu justice, because Desmond Tutu said in December of last year that military invasion of Zimbabwe should not be ruled out. And that had to be music to the ears of one of his key financiers, the Archbishop of Canterbury, England, Mr. Roland Williams. And also, Desmond Tutu is on the payroll of the head of Virgin Islands, Sir Richard Branson, because that elders group that tried to force their way into Zimbabwe, then Tutu was a part of that delegation, him, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, former South African President Nelson Mandela, the widow of former, the late comrade in Mozambique, Samora Machel, currently the wife of Mandela, Gracia Machel, also a Dame Commander of the British Empire. She just received that accolade not too long ago. They got $18 million from Branson to start their group. And Desmond Tutu calling for the invasion of Zimbabwe, which she didn't even want to bring up. So we have to take a look at what Christine Amanpour's relationship to world developments are. And as long as she's married to Mr. Rubin, that makes her an extended mouthpiece of the U.S. government.
All right, I got to stop you there for a quick second, Obi. That's Obi Egbuna, the U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald, joining us this afternoon for a discussion of Zimbabwe and trying to set some of the record straight vis-a-vis what is carried in the popular media. That is going to be our focus this afternoon, and we're opening up the phones now at 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. A lot more to get into, obviously, and I want to come back in just a moment to more of the specific issues raised by Amanpour in that most recent interview with President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. So back in just a minute with Obi Egbuna, your phone calls, and a whole lot more right here on Midday Jazz and Justice. Just a moment ago, we heard a little bit of Ernest Dawkins' Seeds of Betrayal. Before that, we heard Madness from Black and Beautiful Soul in Madness of the new re-release from Some Boy Records featuring Amiri Baraka. And at the top of the hour, we heard Hugh Masekela's Is Anybody Out There from the 1973 album Stimela. We're joined this afternoon by Obi Egbuna, U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald, talking about Zimbabwe and the surrounding political situation. And in a moment, we're going to try to make sure that we relate this to what's happening in this country and other parts of the African world as well. And as Obi, I'm sure you can answer in just a moment more clearly, there is a direct relationship between what's happening there and here. We do have a few people on the phone. I want to let them get in on this first round of calls. And then I want to make sure that we raise some more of these questions about what our leading international CNN correspondent, Christiana Mompour, was saying. But let's go ahead and reward these callers with their patience. Caller, you're on the air with your comment or question for Obi Igbuna and Midday Jazz and Justice on WPFW. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi. Last week I attended a lecture at Hopkins School of International Applied Studies. It featured the ambassador to America's ambassador to DRC, as well as some Congolese human rights activists and other figures. It was dealing with AFRICOM and its relation to the Congo. And I'm just curious as to if your guest had any information on any possible impact of the whole AFRICOM venture on
Great.
Zimbabwe.
Thank you very much. Obi, please do. What is and first tell us, what is AFRICOM? So those who might not know.
For those who don't know what AFRICOM is, it's the African Military Command Initiative that has been pushed aggressive, was first introduced by the Bush administration. Ironically, the most passionate advocate for AFRICOM in the Obama administration is once again Susan Rice. And for those who want to document that, they can look at the paper she wrote when she was previously at Brookings Institution. I'd like to thank the caller for that question. The impact it has on Zimbabwe is obvious. When they were talking about the military invasion of Zimbabwe, Desmond Tutu, this man who says Jesus Christ is his Lord and Savior, calling for the invasion of Zimbabwe, this is part of the AFRICOM agenda. Going back to last year, the Botswanan president, Khama, who got his education in Zimbabwe, by the way, said that his military space could be used if a military invasion was necessary. And President Mugabe responded by saying that there's not an African government bold enough to invade Zimbabwe. In the context of this also, they were hoping that the president of Uganda, Museveni, would still have bad blood aimed at the Zimbabwean people because they were on opposing sides of the issue of the Congo. And President Museveni already told them that Uganda's diplomatic space or military space will not be used against Zimbabwe. So they would like
Plus, he's got his own civil war or civil strife that he's got to deal with, too.
Exactly. And this is the reason why you look at recently President Mugabe and ZANU-PF's detractors inside United States borders keep talking about the military, keep talking about the police, and keep talking about the judicial system. As a matter of fact, Christian Amanpour brought up the police and military also, saying that MDC really doesn't have any control in the country, even though they control the Ministry of Finance, even though they control the Ministry of Education, Sports, and Culture, and even though they control the Ministry of Health. But they're still saying, echoing the sentiments of David Walensky, the son of the Hollywood writer Irvin Wallace, who does his annual Parade magazine in the Post World's Worst Dictator list, and this year President Mugabe had the distinction of being the number one dictator in the world. The reason that their folk, and when they had the hearing in May of 2009 on the Hill, that was chaired by Congressman Donald Payne, the chair of the UN, the United States Subcommittee on Africa and Global Health, the executive director of Trans Africa Forum, Nicole Lee, talked about restructuring the police in Zimbabwe and the military. A police, by the way, that don't even carry guns. And now they're talking about the military because they know President Mugabe's commitment to solidarity. Long before he fought off the bandits in the Congo that were trying to invade the Congo, right after independence, we must not forget he sent 50,000 troops into Mozambique to help Samora Machel fight off the reactionaries in Renamo, which was just as crucial to the landscape of southern Africa as Cuba's assistance to Angola for 14 years on the ground.
All right, that's Obi Igbuna right here on WPFW's Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host. Let's get another call in if we can. And thank you for your patience, caller. You're on the air with your comment or question for Obi Igbuna and anyone else right here at WPFW. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hello. You're on the air.
Yes. I have a question. What is Desmond Tutu's role in anything? I hear that he's part of this World Ecumenical Movement, which is promoting the New World Order. And he has some kind of program going in this area somewhere. This is just, I'm just picking up bits and pieces on it. I don't have any facts on it yet.
Okay.
But,
thank you very much. I think we got the gist of that question. I want to get one more in, and then we'll let Obi respond to both of them. Caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air with your comment or question.
Yes, and good afternoon, my great brothers. Brother Ebuna, if you say that Susan Rice did her PhD thesis on Zimbabwe, I wonder what she learned. She didn't learn anything unless somebody did it for her. Because if she really did it, she will never be the neo-colonialist that she is, the white man in a black body that she is. She is completely a sellout. Archbishop Desmond Tutu is a sellout. So is even President Mandela, ex-President Mandela now has become a sellout. All of them are sellouts because, let me tell you, right under their nose, Africa suffered, and during Clinton's, Africa suffered the worst devastation. I'm telling you, I'm not kidding you, since their post-independence period. They suffered the worst devastation. As these guys looked, and Desmond Tutu is taking all this position so that he can be coming to America anytime he wants, and, you know, with his daughter and the rest of his family over here, he is absolutely, no, I mean, he has complete. Don't listen to him, please, people. Listen to Tutu. Don't listen to Susan Rice. These are all neo-colonialists.
Thank you very much, caller. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We got the gist of that. Forgive me for rushing you off, but we are up against some time constraints. We got to step aside very quickly. Then we're going to come back, and Obi's going to deal with the question of political sellouts and the relationship of Susan Rice and any other attendant issues to this question of Zimbabwe and its relationship to the international community. This is WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host.
Sunshine. Ecstatic. Black gold.
Boogeyman.
Standing in the sun, getting black as I want. You playing good, then that ain't backing me up. Skywalker, baby, ain't no jagging my hem. I got a whole lot to say, so I ain't talking to them. I hear him eavesdropping and turn it up louder. Black freedom, black genius, black power. Black ink for printing the black dollar. Until the CIA, I say, now what? And CC at Central Bank. Loose change, body slamming, big money tanks. We tell God thanks. Y'all telling us that God don't rank. That's why your breath stank.
Yuck.
Lay off the bacon and the smokes. And quit laying off the good work of folks. Quit the hoax. And lay off the corny color jokes. Corn chili to pop. Yelly the colors is a woke. You big dope.
Yuck.
Keep them out your face. Keep them in your prayers. Either that or keep them in the crosshairs. Better still keep an even dose of each, cause until you get justice, you won't get peace, 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 peace.
The gunshot is set, wa-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-da-da-da-day. Hey,
they shout peace, 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 they shout peace, peace, peace.
The firefight lick, wa-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-da-da-da-day.
Hey, rumors and rumors and rumors of war. Then I get that, I don't know what they're there for.
And more.
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war. Killers just killing, I don't know what they care for.
And more.
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war. Then I get that, I don't know what they're there for.
And more.
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war.
Most deaf. Revelations right here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice, off the new album, Ecstatic. More great music you won't hear anywhere else on anybody else's radio, but right here on WPFW. So welcome back, everybody. Obi, just a moment ago, we had callers raising a number of important questions and comments. This issue of political selling out of Mugabe Susan Rice, and any number of other things. Please respond.
Well, I don't think that I disagree with the caller. Friendly disagreement, though. I don't think that Susan Rice or Desmond Tutu can be called sellouts. Sellouts are people who fought on the front line with us, didn't have the fortitude to continue to fight, and then jumped into the camp of the enemy. I know at no point in their history were either Archbishop Tutu or Susan Rice were ever on the front line fighting for the liberation of African people. In the context of what Susan Rice is trying to do, being a very significant influence on President Obama, they are trying to buy time to prevent President Obama from having a face-to-face dialogue with President Mugabe, specifically about the lifting of sanctions. Back to June, and I was in the White House covering the meeting for the newspaper, so I'm not going by rumor and innuendo. I was right there, 10 yards from him. What would be a first down in NFL football. What happened was he referred to Prime Minister Tsvangirai as his partner. And I want to make an analogy between that and when former U.S. President George W. Bush called former South African President Thabo Mbeki his point man on Zimbabwe. To give the impression to Zimbabwe, to give the impression to the rest of Southern Africa that Mbeki would be loyal to him, Mbeki would ally with him, only to see that strategy blow up in Bush's face. George Bush lacked the political intelligence to convince us on his argument of Zimbabwe. Barack Obama attempts to insult our intelligence. He could benefit immensely from a face-to-face dialogue with President Mugabe. As a matter of fact, it would make up for the face-to-face conversation he never got to have with his own father about the viciousness of British colonialism on the African continent, understanding that Kenya and Zimbabwe both have in common British colonialism from pillar to post. So when he tries to say it's a partnership with Tsvangirai, it also shows that Susan Rice has told him not to recognize the inclusive government, but to try to buy time till the next presidential elections. And when Tsvangirai was here interviewing with me, interviewing with the Times of London, interviewing with the State Department, he himself said that this is a prelude to the next elections upcoming. So they're going to try, and that is why President Obama disrespected the inclusive government in Zimbabwe and extended sanctions against Zimbabwe in March. But that's consistent on his part, because going back to when he was a senator in Illinois and the lowest ranking member on the Foreign Relations Committee, he wrote Bush a letter on March 15, 2007, saying don't lift the sanctions on President Mugabe until the dark cloud of Mugabe himself is lifted from power. So instead of having a dialogue with President Mugabe, he'd rather depend on spoon-fed briefings from Susan Rice, spoon-fed briefings from Joe Biden, spoon-fed briefings from Hillary Clinton. Because if he knew to Robert Mugabe that Africa knows, when he wins his election again, he might swear himself in with President Mugabe's Bible instead of Abraham Lincoln's.
Obi Igbuna right here on WPFW's Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host.